Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And Tony Casella.
Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
And Tony Casella.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Tony Casella.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Good evening and welcome inside Jaguars Central at Everbank Field in Jacksonville. Time for 2 hours of football mayhem here. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. I'm Brian Sexton, joined by Jeff Lagerman, the senior writer at Jaguars.com, John Osher, and the man for whom many tweets were sent this week. Will Tony Boselli be back?
He did a
good job last week, so we figured we'd bring him back.
Thank you for letting me come back.
Here's the only thing now. There's nobody sitting between you and Jeff.
I thought we got along very well last week.
We did.
We didn't
fight at all, but Tony brought food last week, and this week you didn't, so it's a different story.
All right, you're going to want to get in on this conversation, folks. This is the lineup for Jaguars this week for the foreseeable future. So Wednesday nights, plan on spending it with us. Tell your friends who don't plan on spending it with us they need to as we break down where the Jaguars are and where they're headed. The phone number 355-NFL1. If you're across the country, across the world, listening on the internet at WOKV.com, it's 800-355-NFL1. And you know, I mean, now that we're getting new TVs hung in here soon. Did you guys know that? Loggy did that. There are going to be three flat screen TVs right behind you.
Can I change seats with you then?
They took it out of my took it out of my paycheck.
Oh, wow. Anyway, we might want to get an email for this. We've never really done the email thing, but what do you think, Joe?
Do I have to do more?
No.
Yeah.
No,
we don't want you to work too hard, Joe.
All right. Hey, look, you know, the big story today, and Joe, that microphone is right there waiting for you. The big story today in the division has a lot to do with the Jaguars, but little to do with their roster, and it's Indianapolis, and it's what the Colts and Bill Polian did, and I want your opinion on this. There has been lots of speculation on Peyton Manning's recovery from his surgery, and today they went and grabbed Kerry Collins out of retirement. It looks on the surface, and John, you know that organization better than anyone, it looks to be a move of quiet desperation. It doesn't look like we're going to have our guy on time. Chris Mortensen reported that there were people in the front office that said as much. Give us your interpretation, your learned interpretation of what this means.
Well, there's no question when that franchise goes out and gets a quarterback that's anything more than a guy that they've signed, drafted, sixth-round level, Jim Sorgi, Curtis Painter, it shows you that there is a real possibility they won't be back for the opener. And in 10 years there, I never – knew them to seriously consider anything close to this sort of a move. Now, you know, does it mean he's not going to play? Not necessarily. I'll still believe that when I see it. But it is not at all insignificant that they would go out and get Kerry Collins. It's also not surprising they would get Kerry Collins. Bill Polian is a very big fan of Kerry Collins. That's not surprising at all.
Before you comment, I want to just throw this in. You realize that in Peyton Manning's career, he's never missed more than one play consecutively because of injury.
Yeah, but the best part of this is not whether he will play opening day or not. It's that he's got an issue that he may not be ready for the opener, which means he is probably not practicing on a regular basis, which means his timing is off. And the last time that this happened, he started out very slow for Peyton Manning.
2008.
When do the Jaguars play Indianapolis?
They don't play Indianapolis until November.
Doggone it.
Right.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, I'll actually take that.
But they start in the division.
I'll go the other way with it. I think it means absolutely nothing. I think what it's telling us is that they've seen what they have in the preseason, and it's been absolutely miserable. And so while I think Peyton starts, they also know he's getting up in age, a neck. There might be some durability issues mm-hmm. during the season they're concerned about. I don't think they're concerned about opening day. And here's the thing. What happened last time?
They absolutely are.
What happened last time, Peyton Manning?
And we You've had the been same living in a cave, Boselli, since,
no,
you know?
I have not been living in a cave. We had the exact same conversations with the knee when he did nothing until the week of opening day.
But they didn't sign a quarterback.
I know they didn't sign it, but he's also 4 years older. And so there might be some concern. But I'm telling you, I will bet you anything, Peyton Manning is on the field opening day, starting the game.
And that's
and last year they went, by the way, when he didn't play at all and his timing was off, they went to the playoffs.
Wait a sec. You believe that too?
What's that?
Even though they went and signed Collins, you believe he'll be there on opening day?
I can't imagine that Yes, I do. Just because I've seen the guy play through. I mean, not the neck, but.
I mean, eventually Favre couldn't play.
Right.
He's a lot older. But
Much older.
But remember this last year, the game that had to be played outside. I mean, all week long it was Favre's not going to play. Oh, my God, Favre's not. I mean, that moment has to come for Manning at some point. And he had neck surgery. Didn't he have it late? Wasn't it May before he actually had it?
I believe that's right.
And he has been very upfront saying, I didn't have my guys. You know, I mean, I didn't have the guys that I have rehabbed my whole career with. I mean, I think there's a real significant point here, and that is that
and they've always had bad backup quarterback play behind him. I shouldn't say bad. Sorgi was not terrible. But
and John, correct me if I'm wrong. The year that he had the knee, and we had the same conversation.
It was 08.
Who was the backup? It was Sorgi.
Yeah, that was Jim's last year.
And Jim was much more capable, had the confidence. I'm not saying he was going to take him to the playoffs, but there was more confidence than the two guys. I mean, the two guys that have played in the preseason right now, they barely can hand the ball off. I mean, I think they had to look at it and say, listen, we got to have some insurance. We don't even have a guy that can barely get the snap. I guess maybe I were to say, is there some significance? Yes. But it doesn't change my belief. He will be the starting quarterback opening day. There's no doubt in my mind.
All right, well then let's change the conversation. Because if he is going to be, he is going to start practicing and working in 2 weeks' time. Right? So how long will it take him to become Peyton Manning? If it took a month in 08 before we actually saw that rhythm that he's destroyed teams.
When he came out in 08, I mean, holy cow, everybody's
well,
like,
Jaguars
oh,
won that
boy.
Game because he was just not on.
I mean, he was just off. And so
it's
unfortunate that the Jaguars don't have Indianapolis within the first couple weeks.
Which they have the last couple
Houston,
of years.
Houston, you know, they get him right there for opening weekend, and Houston's going, oh, yeah.
In 08, though, it wasn't so much rust that hurt him early. It was that the knee wasn't right
was
and the knee wasn't strong.
Right.
But it's everything. It's the injury. It's the timing because Peyton Manning is a workout nut.
I mean,
and he's a guy that's got to have his reps to get the timing down. He still does that routine in pregame.
Absolutely.
Which is very thorough, and he feels like he needs that.
He's absolutely routine.
And so if he doesn't have his routine, which he can't, you can't have a routine when you're injured, he's going to be off. You know, so, but to me, they would not have went and coached Kerry Collins out of retirement if they weren't concerned about him being available for opening day.
What's significant?
They may have looked at another quarterback in another category, but not a guy that they're pulling out of retirement that has experience that could come in and play right away.
Most significant is that on the years where they've been really, really good since 2002, are the years where they've basically started off so fast and run away and hit. And they've had a lot of unbeaten starts.
Yeah, 7-8.
That's when they've been really, really good. I think it's happened six times. This certainly sets up a scenario where it's going to be difficult for them to get away and hide early.
But they weren't getting away and hiding even if Peyton Manning had the entire offseason to be healthy and everything else. I mean, this is not a team with a completely healthy Peyton Manning going through his routine and everything else that's going to go run and hide from this division or anyone else in the AFC. This is not the same team. This is an older Reggie Wayne who is not the same guy. This is an older Dwight Freeney. You watch him. He's still very dominant, very good pass rusher, but not the guy who regularly took over games. I mean, it's an older team. Their stars are older. Dallas Clark was beat up last year. This offensive line is not the same. Jeff Saturday's older. And so they were never running to hide at all.
Well, the division's caught up with him. I don't think you can argue it. It's just that Peyton's the difference maker.
Peyton will be the difference maker. Peyton will still be the guy that will determine how far this team goes. I mean, I don't think there's any question.
I'll pull up their schedule and see what they do the first 5-6 weeks.
And we go back to the knee in 08. They still made the playoffs. I mean, this was still a team that was one of the better teams in the AFC, even starting very slow. They got hot, and they ran into the playoffs.
Either way, them signing Kerry Collins is good news for every fan, with the exception of the Colts. I don't care how you look at it. Was Boselli angry today? Are you angry at somebody?
No, I'm not angry. I think, listen, obviously Peyton's getting older and they're concerned about the neck. I'm not saying that.
He's angry every day.
But I think the play they've gotten from their backup quarterback, it has been horrendous. Mm-hmm. I mean, it has been.
Yeah, but they could have gone and got a younger guy.
It was horrendous.
I don't know, but
who else are they
going to
go get? But yeah, but he was
I'll look.
He had no injuries.
Rob Johnson.
Rob Johnson? Did you just say Rob Johnson?
But they could have gone and found a younger guy to come in if that was all Brian, they were concerned about was handing the ball off.
Who? It's should not just handing Terrell the ball Pryor. Off. They have to have somebody who can actually play. Kerry Collins is a guy that also, I think John hit the nail on the head.
But what I
Bill Polian's very comfortable with.
Likes
He's
him
a guy he likes.
Right, but here's why I say that. Because I see them bringing him in for opening day not to just run their practices.
No, I think they bring him in because they know they got a quarterback who's, how old is Peyton, 35 now?
Yeah.
That's 35 coming off another neck surgery. And even if he's ready opening day, how many hits? I'm not saying Peyton's going to play forever, and I'm not saying he's not going to have the Favre moment, and maybe he has the Favre moment this year. I don't think it's opening day.
All right.
We'll find out.
Okay, just one last thought. You know how difficult it is to get ready for a season, right? I mean, we talked about how much work it would take to get ready for the season on a short off season.
It's hard to get ready for a season, but, I mean, the quarterback position is – I mean, even though you got all your – You know,
even though he is,
you've got the knowledge, and I mean, you know the game. It's I mean, offense is so timing oriented, especially with that offense that they run. You know, it's not like they rely on the running game to really kind of as a crutch. I mean, it's their offense goes as Peyton goes. So,
and in 2008, they started off very. I mean, it was hard to discern how much was the knee, how much was rust, but they were 3-4 that year, and they were. An absolute miracle in Minnesota and a 17-point comeback with 3 minutes to go against Houston from being 1-6. Now, in another one of those losses, they could have won the game.
I was going to say, Jacksonville had to kick a long field goal to beat them. I mean,
but they were very close. It was very realistic that they could have been 1-6 that year. Now, you know, I personally don't think that they're in as much of a decline as maybe Tony is. They were a lot closer to being in the second or third round of the playoffs last year than people think. But – they certainly, when Manning's not in there, they are certainly not as organized, not as dangerous, not as composed in the fourth quarter, which is really where they're good.
Real quick, just want to show you, go through their schedule. They start at Houston, against Cleveland, against Pittsburgh, at Tampa, versus Kansas City. That gets them into week 5. Not an easy schedule.
That's not an easy schedule.
You know, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Tampa Bay, Houston, Cleveland.
We got blown out by Houston last year at the beginning of the season. I did that game. Everyone was calling for the decline of the Colts, and the Colts were done, and they aren't physical. And Houston Texans, here they go. What happened? Indy won the division. Houston ended 6-10. Listen, until Peyton Manning misses a game, and until the division catches up to them, they're still the favorite.
All right, folks, we need a break. We'll take it now. More to come. Jaguars This Week, live from Everbank Field, presented by Aetna, and only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Welcome back, Jaguars This Week. Rolling right along here. Osher, Buscelli, Lagerman, Fortunato, me, Brian Sexton with you, 355-NFL-1, 800-355-NFL-1. We do the Twitter thing, at Jags Voice for me, at John Osher. At Tony Buscelli.
Yeah.
And then maybe by the end of the year, Logs will actually join us.
Log, are you going to get a little Twitter account?
I don't tweet.
So come on, all the fishermen out there and all the boat captains that can follow you.
Nope.
All right.
Well, find out where the fish are biting.
Yeah, I caught them over there.
Yeah, they don't give them up, baby. But here we go. This is from Field the Teal, and he wants to know, and it went to you and me and Osh, I would really be interested in Tony's analysis of the offensive line. Who's playing well and who is not? And it's so timely that you sent this because we were just talking about it before the show began.
Yeah. I watched the game tape actually right before we came in the studio tonight and watched the coach's tape, which you get the sideline view and the end zone view. And the offensive line played as a unit poorly. And if you watch I just watched the first half. That's all I'm really concerned about. I want to see how these first five guys are playing. And if you watch the game, David Garrard was moved off his spot almost every pass, maybe one or two I can remember where he wasn't moved off his spot or hit or sacked, almost every pass play. And people were very critical of David and kind of how he played and the low quarterback rating. Looking at it, I put a lot of that on that offensive line. They ran the ball average. It looked like a lot of free running linebackers. And so as a unit, they did not play. I didn't think they played very well. I thought if you looked at the best, I think Brad's probably the most consistent. You know, he mentally knows what he's doing, very good leader, and still physically can do it. Rackley is a young guy who has a ton of talent. He looked a little bit lost out there sometimes, But that can happen in the preseason. Different fronts, different blitzes. He hasn't had a lot of time at that position, but physically and technique-wise, plays a little bit high, but I like what I see out of Rackley. I think he's a guy who will start this year and be a positive producer for us. As Jeff and I talked about, Uche played better than he played in New England. I still think Uche needs to play better than he did to be consistent. I think it's very critical that those inside three, I think we can be good there. Guy Wimper is a guy who's, you know, we might have to go to battle with him. I mean, everyone talks.
He got better this game.
He did. I agree with you. I thought Guy Wimper played better than Eugene Monroe. And he's a guy who – what I liked about Guy was this. He finishes blocks. He tries to finish the play. He might be limited sometimes in some of the things physically or technique-wise. He might get beat on the edge with a speed rusher, and we saw a little bit of that. But I like – he's a physical, try-hard finish guy. I was disappointed with Eugene Monroe, disappointed how he played. The first two games, I think he's played below my expectation of where Eugene Monroe should be as a third-year left tackle with the ability he has. And, you know, he's picked high. It is what it is. Expectations are going to be high when you're a top 10 pick. You better get used to him. And he's athletically, he has the feet, he has the ability to do it. I think he's too light. He does not look powerful to me at all. His technique in the pass game, he's really getting his head down and getting his butt up. He's getting pushed around quite a bit. And I'd like to see better finish. You know, in the past, I thought his technique was better, and I've always wanted to see kind of that nastiness finish the play type of style. And Eugene, it's in him. I think he can do it. I think he has all the talent in the world. But, boy, he really struggled. And you cannot – that offensive line has to play better. You have to protect the quarterback in this league. I watched our defensive line, who played well. But you look at, in most NFL games, quarterbacks, you can't let them be moved off the spot every play or get hit every play. And Matt Ryan, we got to him and hit him, and we played well. And Jeff and I talked about that. We'll talk about the defense more. But at least he had time. Our quarterbacks never could get comfortable. And then you get Blaine in there, and he's a guy who's a little bit nervous already, and I don't want to get into that because we'll cover that later in the show. But you really, as an offensive lineman, when you have a young quarterback or the backup or a guy, you have to go the extra mile and make sure he is comfortable. And I did not see that out of that group. I had much higher expectations. Losing Eben hurts, obviously, but I think the guy who has to step up is Eugene Monroe. He is too talented. He has too much ability. He needs to play better, and he needs to be the guy that you can go say, go block that defensive end, and we have the confidence you can do it. And I have not seen that in the first two preseason games.
And he really needs to be, you know, that consistent high-level performer. And the main reason for that, for number one, is that he has that ability in him. But number two, he's going to have a pup next to him all year long.
That worries me.
And so when you've got a pup next to a guy, you got a solid guy in Brad Meester to help him on one side. You want to have a solid foundation on the other side of him to kind of help him along. Tony's spot on with Eugene's comments. He needs to play better, and I expect him to play better.
He's too light, Jeff. He's got it. Well, he is way too light.
What is he?
Reportedly, he's between 280 and 285.
He's 85-ish, somewhere right in there. And
I've heard as low as 280.
85-ish is what, yeah.
And
yeah.
He's too light.
We'll get it back up.
But
you know,
here's the problem,
I think,
Jeff,
that's going to be a point of emphasis this week.
When is he going to get it up? When is he going to gain the weight? Because I watch him. And well, you know this.
No,
is
you big pig of guys. One night at Ruth Chris, you know, or
well,
steakhouse,
hey, guess what?
And he's got it on.
Listen, playing offensive line ain't a beauty position. You're not trying to win the, you know, get on the cover of GQ. You know, it's a position you go out there. You have to be big. You have to be physical. You have to be nasty. You got to go fight. You got to be athletic, and Eugene is athletic. But Jeff, you play defensive ends. You know for a fact if you can bull rush a guy, he has no chance to block.
He sets up everything,
and I'm watching and. And we talked about this. He's leaning. He's getting his head down. To me, that's because you're afraid to get bold and you're trying. And I think he's got to be more powerful and he's got to play better.
We've hit the bottom of the hour. We've got a break for news. Obviously, this is a conversation to keep going and going and going. The phone lines are up. We may find time to get to them. 355-NFL-1, 800-355-NFL-1, at Tony Boselli, at John Osher, which is O-E-H-S-E-R.
Yes, sir.
Ozone.
All right, there you go. And at Jag's Voice. And between the three of us, we'll tell Loggy the tweets and what he needs to respond to. So here we go. News is next. More to come. Jaguars This Week, right after this. Welcome back, Jaguars. This week presented by Aetna from Everbank Field in Jacksonville. Brian Sexton, John Osher, Tony Baselli, Jeff Loggeman, Joe Fortunato. The gentleman I'm going to bring on the phone grabbed me at the Team Teal event that I did on Tuesday with a question. Let me set it up. Well, you know what? Let's let Charlie do it. Charlie, go ahead. You know, I told you when we spoke the other day to call and Baselli and Loggeman would answer your question. So go ahead and set it up for them the way that you explained it to me. Be very descriptive. Remember, it's radio, not TV.
Okay. All right. First, thanks for taking my call. Thanks for coming out. Enjoyed your brilliant presentation. You don't just define brilliant, though. But anyway,
you're losing me there a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've lost all credibility with us at this point.
I was just about to say, don't help me, Charlie. Don't help me.
Okay. I was watching the Cowboy-Charger game on, I guess it was last Saturday night, and Gerald Sensabaugh made it what looked like an interception for the Cowboys. And my question was, he came down with one complete foot in with possession, and he came down with a toe, I believe it was his right foot, down in the field of play. However, his heel hit out of bounds, so they ruled it incomplete, which I understand that. However, my question was, when a receiver catches a ball and he catches one foot in and he drags a toe, they give him the catch, and I just didn't know what the difference was.
Same rules apply.
The difference is, because I saw the play, Sensabaugh came down, toe hits, heel goes out of bounds. When a receiver drags his foot, no part of it, the heel never contacts the ground, so it's counted as 2 feet in. If it's a toe, if it's your pinky toe, it could be just your big toe. As long as that's the only portion of your foot that hits the ground and you drag it, that's a completion. As soon as the heel comes in contact with the turf in one complete motion, it is part of the foot and you're out of bounds.
And the reasoning behind that, I mean, the philosophy why they do it that way is the league bends over backwards to take as much judgment out of the play as possible.
Right.
It's logical when you saw the Sensabaugh play to think, well, he really made the play, and if you compare it to the toe drag, yeah, it ought to be an interception. But you can also see the scenario where if you started trying to rule that, how close is close? When does the heel become the, you know?
Opens up Pandora's box.
Yeah, it would just get muddled. So they always bend over backwards. It's why they took away the, you know, the interference on the sidelines, the push-out.
Yeah, the push, there's no more push-out.
They take away anything that involves judgment and that they can for consistency's sake.
Yeah, so same rules apply, Charlie. It's no different from offense to defense.
Right.
Okay, well, if I can do it. So if he just drug his foot, or if he just put his toe down and flipped over back.
Exactly.
Yep,
it would have
been an interception. Interception.
Okay. I knew you guys would know. Brian didn't know, but I knew you guys would.
Yeah, my brilliant analysis, right?
So now you got me back.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-NFL-1 if you'd like to join us on the program this evening. Also, at Tony Baselli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice for your
And then you can
tweets.
Call me. What's the number here?
355-NFL-1. Another story from the South today. Chris Johnson in Nashville with Joel Siegel, his agent, to meet with Mike Reinfeldt and the front office for Tennessee. The report is that there was no real progress made, but that it was a positive that everyone was in the room. You know, much like Peyton Manning, we're talking about the engine. I mean, the guy in Tennessee.
The danger is how much money they are willing to pay him as a top back.
Right.
He wants top playmaker money. Right. And the hard part about running back is it's such a short career, possibly such a short shelf life, and is a position that there's a lot of risk of them making it through the season. And so it's, I think as an organization, you can't pay that guy as a top playmaker. And you look at, you know, and I'm not saying this guy's a replacement, but I believe it was Jamie Harper who came in and played very well for the Titans. And so you look at teams in the NFL that have been able to find second, third, fourth free agent running backs to come in. The New Orleans Saints won a Super Bowl doing it when their top back, Reggie Bush, played a secondary role. And so I think teams look at that and they say, how much money do we want to invest? We'll pay Chris Johnson, just like the Jags have paid Maurice Jones-Drew, as one of the best running backs. But I don't think you're going to see teams pay them as best playmaker.
Yeah, my biggest concern is, if I'm Bud Adams, is that, you know, last year when the Titans kind of fell off the track, so to speak, what did you see out of Chris Johnson?
Not much.
Bad.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about, you know, performance-wise. I'm talking, didn't he kind of shut it down? I mean, is that the type of player that you want to pay big, big money to.
As opposed to a Larry Fitzgerald who never shuts it down.
Or compared to Maurice Jones-Drew, who plays 14 games.
It doesn't matter
games.
What the score is, what the record is.
Not only what the score or game, 14 games on a bad knee. I mean, it's a whole different mentality that certain guys have. If it was me and I was Bud Adams, I would not pay Chris Johnson as a top playmaker.
But he deserves to be paid as
one
top
of the best
running
backs.
Back. There's no doubt, and especially for that football team that's probably going to go in there with Jake Locker. I mean, they've got to have a guy that can take the pressure off of their team.
Jeff, you think they're going to go with Locker? I think they're going to start Hasselbeck.
I mean,
Locker.
Even if they do start Hasselbeck, it's not going to be for long. I mean, you know.
Well, if they go the way we all think they're going to go.
If you listen to Chris Palmer, I mean, Chili, I mean, holy cow, can he make it more obvious? Their quarterback's coach, offensive coordinator, whatever he is, I mean, all he's doing is just raving about Jake Locker.
Can I just give you a little reference point to that, though? I love Chili. I was in
Houston. Why do you call him Chili?
Chili Palmer.
His nickname.
From Get Shorty. remember Chili Palmer?
Yeah, no, I didn't remember that.
But I was with him in Houston when they made the first pick of David Carr, and I had a first row seat to Chili Palmer saying that David Carr was the greatest thing since sliced bread, and nothing against David Carr.
But
I'm just saying.
But he also has a lot invested in Jake Locker.
Well, they all do.
I guarantee you that he had a lot of influence on which quarterback
yes,
to take.
Absolutely.
And so.
Well, there's a whole story
his,
to that.
His bread is baking in that oven.
So my point is, I mean.
And when Chili's got bread in the oven.
It's cooking.
It's cooking.
And I love Chili, but he's like a WWE promoter. You know, or a boxing promoter. He's going to sell his guy, and he's going to sell it until the cows come home. Whether it's reality or not, we'll wait and see.
There's a lot of stories about Chili.
I love Chili. I like Chili was a fun one here when he was the OC. And quarterbacks coach.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. When you look at, just one more thing with him, how many playmakers are there like Chris Johnson in the NFL, though?
You got one of them here. You got Adrian Peterson.
Well, but I mean, just in terms of the, it's tough to defend him because he can go distance on
him. They had no problem defending him last year.
And when it's all you got, you can defend it.
That's the issue.
Okay.
You know, is he? He was so good when they had their balance, so to speak, on offense.
When Kerry Collins was throwing to Justin Gage
and
stretching the field,
and when they were playing good defense, and you know, I mean, he was lights out.
Well, when he had 2,000 yards, what was their record?
8-8.
Okay, so my point is, I mean, I'm not trying to take it. I mean, he's a dynamic back. I'd pay him as one of the best backs. I wouldn't pay him as a playmaker because. You need so much more.
I mean, here we are talking about Peyton Manning.
Well, it's good for us.
Chris Johnson is having issues within the division. You know,
it's good news.
Heck yeah!
But you watch Peyton Manning.
We got to find a problem for Houston.
Can we get Matt Schaub to hold out?
I just don't think the Chris Johnson thing is. I mean, I know it's big, but I agree with you guys. It is not a position that having a great one by himself is going to even put you in the postseason.
Look at Walter Payton.
It's not a – I mean, I don't say it's insignificant.
It's a great
but it
great
is not there. The franchise-changing position any longer.
You know, the only thing that I can say about Houston as far as their issues, have you guys watched their games at all?
I haven't seen them.
This new 3-4 defense with Mario Williams.
I don't buy that at all.
It ain't working.
He's not a
– well, that's good.
He's not an outside linebacker.
It's not working.
I mean – I'll tell you this, if I was game planning them and I was the offensive line coach, I'd go into the meeting with all the other offensive coaches and I'd say, we will treat him as a down player every time because he's going to do us a favor if he drops in the pass coverage.
It's Greg Ellis, right? I mean, the former Cowboy hand
I don't think
it,
I don't know
who went
but
outside.
Greg adapted to it pretty well. Greg,
yeah, I don't think
Greg
it's that
pretty,
good.
Pretty good in space, and Mario Williams looks, boy, he looks like, you know, the old cliche fish out of water. Wow, boy, I'm sitting there going, who's that guy? That's Mario Williams, the guy that you used to see just pick guys up and throw them around like nobody's business?
And do you take a Pro Bowl defensive end and make him an outside linebacker?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, to me, that may have been the greatest thing that happened to the South.
And I know we got
AFC South, and I'm talking about the other teams besides Houston.
Jeff, let me ask you a question. Why wouldn't you, if you're Wade Phillips, who was in Buffalo when Bruce Smith – was a pretty good defensive end.
And ran the 4-3.
And ran the 3-4 with Bruce Smith as a five technique. Mm-hmm. I mean, wasn't the biggest guy, but he played five technique. He was a two-gap guy. Mario Williams is bigger and stronger than Bruce Smith was. Why not put him at the five technique and then move him outside to that rush end on the, on your four-man front?
Sub. Yeah,
that makes more sense to me.
They could, but I don't know. I'm watching it, and I'm going, that's good for the Jaguars.
Very good.
Couple of good news notes from around the South today for the Jaguars, not necessarily for their respective teams. All right, we'll break. News is coming up at the top of the hour, so we've got one more segment before then. Bring it, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351 to talk to Loggeman. Tweet everyone else. Jaguars This Week continues in just a moment. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Let's grab some phone calls. We'll start with Michael out in Atlantic Beach. Michael, you're up on Jaguars This Week. Good evening.
Well, good evening. Thank you for bringing me on the show. I have a couple things that I wanted to talk about. First of all, according to Vegas, Jaguars' season's not looking too good. Predictions there under 6.5 games is their prediction.
Who's this Vegas fella?
No, it's at the sports book.
And 25 to 1 for the championship and 40 to 1 for the Super Bowl. And also, you know, another thing that kind of
so you say six and a half. Hold on, you say 6.5 wins.
Yeah, there's 6.5.
I'm not a gambler, but if I had some matchsticks, I think we're going to win more than 6.5.
They won't win 6.5.
They said that. So you guys have to understand how Vegas odds work. So a lot of people out here, I'm sure, don't understand.
Yeah,
that,
Michael, you're not talking my language.
Yeah, I have no idea.
It's the wrong show for the gamblers.
But what's next?
Well, the other thing is that a lot of people, fans, are disappointed out here because I believe in talking to a lot of people out here that a lot of people wanted Jack Del Rio gone, and a lot of people out here don't think David Garrard is the right quarterback for the job.
So what's your point?
My point is I think the Jaguars are going to have to mix it up to get anywhere this year. Let's talk about the last 2 years for the Jaguars. Blow four games at the end of the season, blow themselves out of the playoff spots. Last year.
So are you asking, you know, most people who call the shows these days are asking for a quarterback change. Are you asking for a coaching change now?
I absolutely think the Jaguars need a coaching change.
Hold on now, Michael.
Michael,
I mean, we're not going to, whether you like Jack, dislike Jack, think he's a good, bad, indifferent coach, I can promise you one thing. The solution is not to fire Jack Del Rio today, 2 weeks before opening day with two preseason games left. And whether David's going to be the quarterback or Blaine's going to be the quarterback, I think a lot of that's going to be determined how this team plays early in the season. My guess is David's going to start the season. If they play well, he'll be the quarterback for the rest of the year. If he doesn't, Blaine will be quarterback. If they don't play well this year, Jack Del Rio probably will get fired. But it's not going to happen today, whether you like him or dislike him.
Book that with the six and a half wins.
That's idiotic. And I will bet any amount of money you want that they don't win 6.5.
Yeah, right.
Oh, Michael, you kind of remind me of Glum from Gulliver's Travels.
Michael's from Atlantic Beach. I'm hoping he doesn't vote in the election out there next Tuesday. The odds makers is
haven't even played a
about.
Game yet, and he's like, you know,
fire him.
Fire him!
All right, JD is in Mandarin next. Hello, JD, what's going on?
It's over.
Hey, what's going on, y'all? Hey,
how are you?
Good, I'm doing great, and you guys probably going to run me off of the air for this question, but I just have a hard time getting my arms around it, and I'm not going to be quite as abrasive as the previous caller there. But
what are the odds when he makes it through the whole call, guys?
He's going to make it.
All right.
Last year, over the or the course of last 4 or 5 years, we've had some first round draft choice that, you know, we spent a lot of money on that didn't pan out, and I know that happens in that business. And I'm not in the NFL, so I don't know the business aspects. So I'm asking Tony and Jeff, you guys have all been inside that locker room and know what goes on. When they had an opportunity at Tim Tebow as a quarterback to bring into Jacksonville with the support of the Gator Nation in Florida, and Tony, you've been really hard out there trying to get people into the stadium.
Yep.
Why would we turn around the next year and spend a first-round draft choice?
Great question.
Against, nothing against Blaine Gabbert.
Can I let me answer, JD?
Like
I got
you. Dynamic individual, but
JD, I got your answer. Let me give you your answer. The reason we did not the scenario we just went through is because we drafted a top 10 defensive tackle who's been dominating all training camp in the two preseason games, and Denver has a guy reported from their own camp that is the fourth best quarterback in their camp, and we have a young quarterback that was the number one quarterback on everyone's board
for the most part,
most people's board,
dominant
amount of boards. We got him as the 10th pick. So listen, Tim Tebow, great individual. I have a lot in common with him. Outstanding. But there was only one team in the draft last year was going to pick him, and one coach who traded up. Tim's obviously struggling, according to their own coaches. And we have Tyson Alualu, who's one of the best young defensive tackles in the game. I think it was a brilliant choice. And we have Blaine Gabbert, who so far, you know, it's early, but he looks pretty good to me.
Real quick, you don't just market to Gator Nation, right?
Well, yeah, listen.
I mean, you're that's the thing.
Let me just say this. With whether you liked Tyson Alualu last year or you were a Gator fan or not, we sold more season tickets in this community than any other NFL team. We went from 31st in the NFL to 21st ahead of teams like Chicago and major markets and tickets distributed. And it had nothing to do with Gator Nation, Seminole Nation, Hurricane Nation, if there's even a Hurricane Nation after all the allegations any longer. But whatever it is. And so, listen, and I don't buy this whole if you draft Gators, they're going to – because we draft two of them that now got cut.
Derek Harvey
didn't
and
do anything.
Nelson.
So we need to draft players based on their ability and how good at players they are. And if it's a Gator quarterback or a Southern Cal quarterback, I don't care. I just want them to be good.
Count me as stunned that somebody actually called and brought that up the day after Pro Football Talk ran the headline, Tebow, fourth best quarterback in Broncos camp.
JD, you didn't read that?
Abrasive there now.
No, I'm just asking. Tim Tebow's dad's a friend of mine. I like him, but if we're talking football, you realize that right now, according to every report and every
credible source,
that he is the fourth best quarterback in the camp.
Well, you guys are probably a little too young, but Jim Plunkett was also that way for many years before he got his play at the Raiders. So. Anyway, I appreciate the time, guys.
Okay.
Thank you, JD.
Good job. Go Jags.
Go Jags.
We're still a supporter.
I love it, JD.
Just trying to wrap my arms around it.
I understand. We got a great defensive tackle in Tyson Alualu last year, one of the best young defensive tackles in football.
You know, and when are we going to get past the point that, you know, the Jaguars could have gotten the Gator Nation?
Well, that's a misnomer, number one.
But, that's the point. When are we going to get past the point of the Seminole Nation will support the Jaguars if they get this guy? It's not about their nation. It's about being
Jag Nation.
That's what it's about.
And here's what I think, too. And if you look at the venue that we're all in, and, Osh, you get this on your mailbag, the vocal people – are typically, a lot of times, the minority of the people. So, and I'm not just talking whether it's Seminole Nation or Gator Nation, the loud ones, you know, typically that doesn't mean how everybody else feels. I know a lot of Gator fans, Seminole fans, Hurricane fans that love the Jaguars, and all they want, guess what they want? They don't care what school the guy went to. They want to win.
By the way, Jim Plunkett out of Stanford was never, ever questioned as much as Tim Tebow has been. Knew he was going to be a great quarterback. Not even close.
And
JD.
It took Jim a few teams to really polish his skills and then to get with one hell of a head coach
and a great,
unbelievable roster.
I was going to say, you look at that roster that he had that when he won, nothing taken away from Jim Plunkett, but he had a lot of help.
Sure. News is next.
WOKV AM Jacksonville, WOKV FM Ponte Vedra Beach.
AM 690 and 106.5 FM. The station Jacksonville turns to first for breaking news and live team coverage of the day's top stories. News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
It's 7 o'clock and 86 degrees with mostly cloudy skies. I'm Matt Augustine. Our top national story is breaking news. Apple CEO Steve Jobs will step down as the company's number one, and it looks like his COO, Tim Cook, will be taking over as the company's CEO. Jobs is reported to be staying on with Apple as the company's chairman. That's about all we know right now. In local news, we continue to follow the movements of Hurricane Irene. Right now, the storm is wreaking havoc on the Bahamas. As of 5 p.m., she's a Cat 3 storm, moving northwest at 12 miles an hour, sustaining winds of 120 miles an hour. Still no real impact expected on Jacksonville, except for some rain and rough surf. But the same, however, cannot be said for the Carolinas.
It's a tough call to say if the system's actually going to move inland over the Outer Banks or just stay a little bit offshore. But nonetheless, some significant impacts are possible there the early portions of this weekend.
That's John Cangelosi with the National Hurricane Center in Miami. The Outer Banks of North Carolina have already started to evacuate as emergency workers head out there to get ready for the storm. And the Florida Highway Patrol says the officer involved in a crash this morning on Greenbrier Road near County Road 210 smelled of alcohol.
He crossed into the opposite lane and struck another vehicle, so he is at fault. Charges will be made, but they'll be made at a later date once the investigation is complete.
Lieutenant Bill Leeper says 39-year-old Officer Michael Rollison would not submit to a blood test, and there was beer on the floorboard of the police cruiser. The Mustang he hit was driven by an 18-year-old, Joshua Carter. His father tells us that Joshua should be fine. The Tea Party favorite, Michelle Bachmann, will enjoy some sweet tea on the First Coast this week. The First Coast Tea Party is inviting the Republican presidential candidate to Angie's Subs on in Jacksonville Beach this Friday at 3:30 p.m.
Good evening and welcome back. Hour number two now of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. Brian Sexton, John Osher, Tony Buscelli, Jeff Loggeman, Joe Fortunato. Jaguars and Bills from, what can I think of the name?
Ralph Wilson.
Ralph Wilson.
The Ralph.
Ralph Wilson Stadium.
Come on.
It slipped my mind for a minute. I was going to say, what did they call it before it was Ralph Wilson
Rich
Stadium.
Stadium.
Rich Stadium. Rich. I was about to say Rich and I got caught. Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show starts at 4. For those of you who are listening outside of our calling area, we pick you up at 6. We decided the pregame show, kickoff at 7, whistle-to-whistle coverage, followed by the Winn-Dixie postgame show and the Southern Ford Dealers scoreboard show. Preseason completely different in terms of the third preseason game, guys, than it has been in the past, because this was generally the last warm-up for the majority of the starters, but the starters are going to play next Thursday as well against the St. Louis Rams.
Yeah, but I still think that the third game is the one, you know, and because you got a short turnaround for the next game, so you're probably not going to want to expose your starters for very long, if at all, in the fourth preseason game. My guess would be none of them pretty much play for the last preseason game against the Rams. You know, this game still has significance. It still has importance. Now, once the starters are done, then I think then you're going to see a little different scenario in that you're going to see guys that may have been a backup that have already secured a roster spot not play, and where they've got positions they need to evaluate. For example, one position I'm talking about, corner.
Right.
Okay. You'll see the starters, Derek and Rasheen, play, and then after those guys, you're not going to see
William Middleton, David Jones.
Yeah, I mean, William Middleton, you know what he is. I mean, he's a good special teams player. He's probably going to make the roster. So at that point, you'll look at playing, you know, Rod Isaac, T.J. Heath, and the other guy.
Kevin Rutland from Missouri.
Yeah, those are the guys you got to evaluate. So those type of players will be in. But I'm looking forward to it because, you know, we've got a trip scheduled to the Anchor Bar Friday night?
Friday night.
You know, the birthplace of wings.
I can't wait.
You're going, right?
Absolutely. I love wings.
That was a big blowout last year.
That'd be a little scary.
I'm gonna just tear those.
What are you weighing now? You weigh more than Eugene Monroe.
I promise you, I weigh more than Eugene Monroe. I promise you that.
Maybe you need to grab Monroe and bring him along.
Let me just say this: it's not even close.
Oh boy!
And you know what? Maybe I should get him on the training resume.
Maybe you should grab him as you head out the.
Me and Pot Roast. Maybe me and Pot Roast take him aside.
Chips and beer and dessert.
Yeah, you know, some chips, some wings, some cheesecake. You know, ice cream with some Hershey sauce on the. You know, pancakes in the morning. Me and Pot Roast can take him out.
Oh. I know. Hey, you know the one person that I could guarantee you that could get Eugene Monroe to put on a few pounds in a short period of time? Paul Fraze.
Oh, gosh.
Why do you say that?
Because he can eat.
Yeah.
Paul Frays, and Paul's probably listening. He loves listening.
He's rather
to the
skinny
show.
Now.
When Paul
skinny,
was playing,
relatively speaking, last time I saw him, he looked
fit.
Good.
Paul had
a little bit of
a thyroid condition when he was at the Jets, and then after that point, his metabolism kind of stayed faster than what it used to be. That cat would go to the chow hall down there in the morning when we served breakfast, and he'd have a stack of like 7 or 8 pancakes and would have peanut butter strewn on top of everyone, about a whole cup of syrup on top of that. And then you got another plate over here
that's got
eggs with cheese and bacon stacked up all high, and I'd go, my God, what is wrong with you?
So do I sense a wing eating contest in the making between you two?
Absolutely. Those days are done for me.
Listen, did you see
absolutely.
That? Absolutely.
I wouldn't stand a chance
eating wings with you.
In the day, I'd wear you out.
I doubt it. I might take both you and Sexton on combined, and I'll eat more wings than both of you.
I think take me, Brian, and Joe.
All right.
Looking
I don't
at
know
the,
if I can take Joe.
Looking at the size
winter,
of you.
Winter buys.
We need three.
Winter buys.
You know, back to the third preseason game we were talking about. And you got to remember that this is also the preseason game where they have their mock practice week. And so they act like, you know, they have a Monday, they have a Tuesday day off, they Wednesday practice, Thursday practice.
Regular season routine.
So this is still – I think a very important preseason game, and it's going to be the one preseason game you're going to see the starters have to go into halftime and come out and start the second half.
And well, the game plan too. I mean, and that's
great point.
You know, that's something that you know Jack and Gene both mentioned this week is it's really hard to judge. There's been a lot of talk about the offensive efficiency so far, and it's really hard to judge the offensive efficiency until the offense has started game planning. So I think this is a game where. You know, you can judge that a little bit.
I don't completely agree with that.
Yeah, I don't either.
I disagree with that, and I love Gene Smith. You know, I respect Jack Del Rio as the head coach. The bottom line is I turn on the film or turn on the TV and watch good offenses. You know what I see them do, John? They go up and down the field.
Yeah.
Well, I don't care. At the end of the day, the good offenses, they line up and say, okay, I'm going to block him, you block him, and you go run this post. And they go do their stuff. No matter what the defense shows them, they go do their stuff. I don't buy that. I think you know game planning helps. I think game planning. I think is a. I know when I played left tackle, when I knew who the defensive end was going to be, I could game plan him. I could get tendencies.
But I do agree with Gene's comments that was in the interview with you, John, and that he talked about how because you had no OTAs, you had a lockout. And that typically early in camp, your offense is a little bit behind the defense. And so I think you, if you look around the league, you do see that offenses aren't exactly lighting it up. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is to do with the lockout and everything else. Now, will it take them long to get it back up to speed? I don't think so. But I think Gene is right in that respect and that, you know, without OTAs and timing issues and camps and all that, they're a little bit more behind than they typically are in the preseason.
Playing two quarterbacks at the same time probably doesn't help much.
No, and you know what? There's been a lot of talk.
But, guys, that's not the biggest issue. The biggest issue is not the quarterbacks. The biggest issue is the quarterbacks getting hit every play.
Well, and you know what? Along those lines, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the quarterback play from this past game, and I thought David was pretty solid. You know, so
it wasn't an issue. I didn't think.
I thought he was very solid. I thought he made some throws in that game that he had some heat coming on him that were just top notch.
I agree.
He had the one bad play, the throw down the middle, and I didn't like even more was what he said after the game. But I mean, that's another conversation. But I thought he was pretty sharp. And remember, that was his first preseason action. I thought it was pretty good.
We've got Kevin up the road in Savannah with a thought on or a question about the other bad play David had, and that was the reverse where there was the fumble.
It wasn't David's bad play,
okay.
But go ahead.
I don't mean it to be David, but he was involved in. So Kevin's up the road. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Oh, good. Fine, thank you. I'm glad to hear Jeff finally say it. It seems like he was struggling during the broadcast to figure out whose fault it was. I mean, I watched the play a couple of times, and Cecil Shorts was running a 45-degree angle away from the line of scrimmage. David was trying to reach him with the ball, and he never gave him a pocket. But it just seemed like during the broadcast, Jeff was having a hard time figuring out who should take the blame for that play?
Well, it was that 15-inch Bowden Associates replay monitor in the booth.
Jeff's getting older in age, and he can't see.
We need a more high-def monitor.
Kevin, the reason I was having a hard time because I really wasn't watching the angle, so to speak, of Cecil Shorts. But then once I had a chance to see it, like a play or two later,
right.
You could clearly see that Cecil Shorts' eyes were on number 55 behind David, and that was John Abraham, and started to try to adjust his angle, hoping maybe the quarterback would follow him. And the quarterback, hey, look, when you work out on in practice, you can't change the way you approach the handoff. It's got to be the same. So that was all on Cecil Shorts, but it just took me a few plays to get it in my 15-inch Bowden Associates replay monitor.
That was a 15-inch monitor?
And it was definitely
Cecil. Might have been 12.
It was definitely Cecil Shorts' fault, and he actually took ownership of it.
Right.
David had a couple comments, though, about some of those questionable plays that I thought were a little bit concerning.
Okay, before you do the comment, let me just ask you this one question, and then I want to get to the comments.
Are we done with Kevin, by the way? Kevin,
yeah.
You got anything else?
Yeah, he's
yeah, he hung tonight. Up. See you, Kev.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks for calling out, Jeff. I enjoyed that immensely.
Glad you did.
It's a preseason game, so it wasn't a lot of game planning. And I got the question this week, so I'm bringing it to you guys. At the line of scrimmage when the Falcons show blitz on a reverse in a regular season game plan, would David have just changed
wasn't
the play?
Wasn't a blitz.
Oh, it wasn't
mean,
a
no,
blitz.
John Abraham's John, just never man bought on line it, of scrimmage.
And he never bought the reverse. Never bought the fake handoff. You're expecting, as you fake the underneath handoff, that John Abraham's going to go flatter to go try to make the play. He got his depth and beeline for David. The fake was never bought. And that's the risk of the play. And that's just part
that
of the deal.
If that fake handoff might have been to a 32.
It might have been different.
He might have been a little flatter.
You know? Exactly right.
All right, now back to the comments that troubled you.
Now, hold on, because I wasn't there.
Were
you there? John, were you there?
Yeah.
So
there. Can
you tell
me? We'll
I've heard it secondhand, and I want to be fair to David.
Right.
And fair to everybody, but I've heard everyone talking about these comments. I didn't hear them directly, and so I was wondering, John, I know you.
Yeah, I don't have the quote with me, but, you know, basically he was talking about Mike Thomas and probably didn't word what he was trying to say very well. And
was it just the Mike Thomas play, or did he say anything about the Cecil Shorts play as well? Because I thought I'd heard both, but I didn't.
I heard the Mike Thomas.
Okay.
Yeah, the emphasis was Mike Thomas, and he was talking about how on the play that Mike probably should have kept going on the play, maybe should have broken up the pass. And it was hard to say, who was right or wrong. It just didn't sound very good coming from your starting quarterback, no matter who was right or wrong.
Yeah, and that I guess that's consistent with what I heard. I mean, I don't –
Hey, since we got to go to a break, we'll just kind of leave it at that.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Fair enough.
Wasn't well said.
Wasn't right. Well said. We'll give David the benefit of the doubt.
He was taken out of context.
I blame the reporter.
it's
your mob
fault,
there. John. It's the mob there. It wasn't just me.
Blame the ozone.
Leave that one alone, too. Back after this. All right, rolling right along here. News again at the bottom of the hour, courtesy of News Talk Radio WOKV. JD from Mandarin, at the top of the last hour as we went to break, was talking about Tebow and Alu Alu. And your story today on Jaguars.com, how's that for shameless self-promotion,
sure.
Or shameless promotion,
is about
Tyson and the way that he played. And Logs, you and Buscelli last week on this show were talking about the presence of a three-technique tackle and what that means. So let's go to Tyson over the next 7 to 10 minutes here and the way he's playing and the impact that he's going to have this year.
Well, it's just striking to me that, you know, I told you guys before, I wasn't here when he got drafted. I remember when they made the pick, I said, boy, this guy must really be able to play for them to have that kind of confidence to take him at number 10 with all the Tebow stuff going on. It was a pick where, sort of like when they picked you, Tony, where they had to know this is going to be a guy who is going to come in and we're going to be able to build around him. Oftentimes that doesn't work out to where it happens. And I think it's significant that so soon into his career he's having one of these camps where everybody's saying, boy, this guy is the real deal.
Well, and he played well last year. Let's not forget. I mean,
and he wasn't healthy all
season.
He wasn't
healthy. I remember I believe it was Jeff Saturday I talked to before one of the games doing the Westwood One stuff this year and going. I did a number of Colts games, and I talked to him, and he said – he watched the film and turned it on and was very impressed of how explosive and powerful Tyson Alualu played. I mean, and here's a veteran center right. who's played against a lot of different guys. And I talked to another front office person and a coach of another team, I won't mention the team, that said they were hoping that the Jaguars would give in to the pressure to take Tebow. And when they took Alualu, they said they knew he was a good player because they would have liked to get him now down the road further. I'm not saying they were a top 10 team. And so there was sediment out there early, even last season. I traveled around the NFL saying,
"Yeah,
Tyson Alualu, he can play."
Go look at the teams who started backing up from after the Jaguars took Alualu. The Broncos backed up. The Chargers backed up. I mean, there were a bunch of teams that were hoping to get him in and around between 10 and 15.
And it's legitimate. The guy can play. I mean, Jeff knows the position better than I do, but I know guys I played against, and he has things you don't like to see as an offensive lineman. He's explosive. He's quick off the ball. He's a powerful individual, and he doesn't quit. I mean, so it's like, great. Not only do I have to play a good player this week, I got to play a good player who doesn't want to give up.
Yeah, I remember
a lot of times some of the good players give up, so at least it's a little bit easier.
Last year when he was a rookie coming in, you know, you always kind of ask the veterans what they think about a young player that has to face that young player in practice. And Brad Meester said to me, he said, the guy's hands are unbelievable. And playing defensive line and offensive line, you got to have good hands and good hand placement and be able to work them. And his hands from day one have been exceptional. And you combine that with, you know, power, speed, strength, motor, intelligence. I mean, he's got all the things that you want, you know, in a top pick. And having him with Pot Roast, when Pot Roast gets his weight down finally, you know, we saw a few plays out of Terrence this past Friday night that were fantastic. The only issue is we only saw him for about 15 plays. You know, can he maintain that for 45 or 60 plays? You know, hopefully he continues to get in shape and he can do that. But that's a heck of a tandem. And we had Paul Posluszny on, another cheap, shameless plug, Jaguars All Access.
Mondays at 7.
and he was raving about playing behind these two guys and looking forward to it. And then, man, if I was a middle linebacker and I could play behind, you know, guys like that, or like in Baltimore, Tony, you remember when Siragusa and
Sam Adams
were,
holy cow. Yeah, they were a handful.
You got a lot of free runners as a linebacker because you could not get to the second level.
You know,
they ate you up.
During the broadcast the other night, Logs, I think I pointed it out to you, that Peter King, who was here for the game, tweeted, you know, something to the extent of, my goodness, Tyson Alualu is very difficult to block. And it was, okay, now the national press, which didn't see Jacksonville because they weren't very good the last
few years.
Yeah,
Peter put something about it in his column, I guess.
Exactly. I mean, now week. All of a sudden, the mainstream football fans might start to know the name. They'll certainly know the hair. You know, I mean, they let's be honest. I mean, people are going to, they see that, they know.
He's got the big Palomalu thing.
You bet, exactly.
Well, and I think
maybe he'll get a commercial.
You talk about what Peter King said and Posluszny and all the positive things you hear about the two defensive tackles we have. I think legitimately this defensive front, the front seven, has a chance, and with Dwan Landry playing strong safety, they have a chance to be a top five run defense. I mean, this is a very – now, they got to stay healthy, and and Terrence's weight has to stay under control because you need him to play 45 plays a game. But if that happens, I don't see a lot of teams pushing the Jaguars around and running the ball where they want to.
How big is it when he's on the sideline not playing? And I'm not talking about
which one,
Terrence. And I'm not talking about his weight because
it's huge.
Well, you don't have another body that you can put in there. You talk about him playing 45 to 60 snaps. It's not like De'Anthony Smith can come in and play that role. That Lejay Douzable can come in and play that role, right?
Well, Jeff,
how do you play it?
Well, I'll let Jeff talk about how you play it. But to Jeff's point, I watched the tape, and there was two plays that stuck out. Now it was only he had a short rep night. Whether it was his weight or just because it was the first preseason game he played in. But one, he took a double team right back to the lap of Matt Ryan and hit Matt Ryan as he's throwing the ball. And this is a legitimate double team. And the other one, he took the Blaylock, their starting left guard, pressed him into the backfield, and Michael Turner, who's a 250-pound back,
big man,
with his free arm, stuffed him in the backfield. I mean, so the guy could do special things. I mean, Jeff, what do they do when he's on the sidelines, though?
Well, hope to get by in the running game without him. Now he's a good player, and you know we're talking about D line, and you know I mean we all know that those two guys are good.
Right.
You know, and the things that I'm looking for this week is what happens behind them. You know, because you know cut days are coming up. You know what's going to happen with you know Douzable and C.J. Mosley and De'Anthony Smith. You're talking about five defensive tackles right there.
Can Mosley be a guy? I mean, I know he's not.
Mosley is a true nose tackle, first and second down guy. But, you know, Duzable's got the flexibility to play end. He can play three technique. He could probably play nose in a pinch. De'Anthony Smith has made a miraculous recovery from an Achilles injury. But, you know, if you could take De'Anthony Smith and maybe just hide him for a year, boy, wouldn't that be nice. But, boy, do you risk
he's on the roster,
trying to hide him? That would be hard to do.
I see no scenario where De'Anthony Smith is not one. I'm not saying he's going to be in the rotation on game day. But he's going to be on the squad.
Gene said to me yesterday that he thought he really made strides in the game against the Falcons from where he played against the Patriots. Did you see that on the tape?
Yeah, he's moving a lot better. He's got a chance to find a way to get into that rotation. He's got a great work ethic, got a great attitude. One of the guys who may end up finding the next couple weeks to be a big disappointment is Larry Hart. You know, Larry Hart did not have a good game against Atlanta. Aaron Morgan showed a little bit more than Larry Hart. Showed some athleticism, chasing Matt Ryan down to one time. The biggest question and the most interesting thing to me is what's the number?
Yeah, do you keep 8 or 9 defensive linemen?
8, 9, and some teams have kept 10.
Well, if it's 9, then you have to make a decision. Do you keep the
– But Morgan was inactive, so –
Right, do you keep the extra pass rush specialist, which would be Morgan at this point? Because your 4 defensive ends are Mincy, Roth, Lane, and Campman.
Well, linebackers are going to be a little light. So with linebackers being light, you might be able to gain a little extra on the defensive front.
Because Morgan can play special teams.
Because he can play special teams, and also you're talking about rolling the defensive line in waves.
And I didn't watch the whole second half. I watched it in person, and I didn't watch the whole second half on the coach's tape today. But the first half when I saw Morgan get in there, he still does not get off blocks and does not – the flashes he shows in practice rushing the passer, Jeff, I haven't seen it in a game yet.
All right, time for news here at the bottom of the hour. One more half hour of Jaguars This Week, presented by Yetna, only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. All right, one half hour left of Jaguars This Week, presented by Yetna. Brian Sexton, along with John Osher, Tony Buscelli, Jeff Lagerman is here. Joe Fortunato taking your calls. You know, we started the show talking about the health of Peyton Manning, the star for the Colts. What about the health of Maurice Jones-Drew overall for this football team? He's not going to play in Buffalo. He'll probably play a limited amount. How comfortable with his knee and the start of the season are you?
For us, kind of just from the outside looking in, because we don't get to see practice. With 30 minutes, John, you get to go out there and
about that.
Watch him stretch. Limits, right. And, so you don't get to see much. So, you're nervous because, that he is the foundation of the offense. And you're not getting an idea of how healthy he is and how durable that knee is going to be. I'm sure that the coaching staff and the medical people have some type of understanding of what they expect. And so, but I still think it's imperative to have Rashad Jennings to continue to show what he did in that first preseason game. He's going to be back in the lineup this week. And I think he's a fantastic player. I think he is not only a great first and second down back, he's got great hands in the passing game. So, I'm kind of nervous about it because, David Garrard is not Peyton Manning, and the offense, I know you're surprised by that statement, Tony, but this offense is based around a kick-butt rushing attack, number three in the league last year.
Well, what's the right ratio going to be this year? Clearly he wore down as the year went on, and he had the knee fixed, and he said he's pain-free. But you're still going to have to be careful with him. So how much more does Rashad Jennings carry? How much do you want to see with the ball? Does Deji Kareem have to be more of a factor game to game?
Yeah, I don't know if Maurice wore down last year. I just think the knee wore down. I think if he's healthy.
More specific, you're right.
Yeah, I think if he's healthy, he's still a guy. I think he can carry the ball 300 times. I would not go over 300, though. I'd try to keep him under
that. He was at 299 last year.
Yeah, and with 2 games left, though.
Right.
And so I try to keep him right at that 300 number. And so you got to plan your game out. And because the other thing is it's not just the touches he gets running the ball. He also catches the ball, and he does a good job out of the backfield and screens. He's a very good screen player. So you got to limit his touches. But here's the reality is this. Maurice Jones-Drew wants the ball. He feels as healthy as ever. Every report that I've heard, official, unofficial, whatever, is the guy is ready to go, itching to get back out there. And he is your, I don't want to say only because that's not fair, but he's the guy that is the playmaker of this team. I mean, as much as any other team, I mean, if you look around on this roster, whether it's Mike Thomas, Mercedes Lewis is inching up into that role, but the playmaker is Maurice Jones-Drew. You have to have the ball in his hands.
The only thing I'll say is if he was ready to go, why wouldn't they play him in Buffalo?
I wouldn't.
If you're going to play him in the preseason, why not play him a little bit in Buffalo and then be done?
Why?
I wouldn't. I'd get, here's the other but thing.
They say he's got to make the team?
Well, no, no, but they say he's going to play in the preseason.
Right.
Well, so, I haven't heard that.
Now, see, that was what Jack said. He said last night on his radio show, wants to get him in, take a couple hits, get back into a bit of a rhythm.
I would give him three rushes.
At the most.
Maybe only two. And I wouldn't be mad if they gave him one.
I'm not saying he needs to play. I've been told he's going to play.
I mean, that's all I would do. The guy knows how to run the ball. I mean, preseason is important. But my guess is Jeff would feel similar. After about, and this is playing as an offensive lineman, not even as a kind of a field position, which running back is all just kind of feel and you can do it or you can't. 10 days, I'm ready to go. Let's suit up. Let's go. I mean, a week of practice, one preseason game. I mean, in college, you practice for 10 days and you go start the season. I mean,
I want to see 32 on September.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not worried. I guess I'm not worried at all.
After their rookie season, I would play running backs as little as I possibly could.
Yep. I'd want to see 74 on September 11th, and that's Aaron Kampman.
I wouldn't. I don't think I would play him either. I mean, two ACLs coming off later in the year. He's not old, but he's get on the back half of the career. He knows how to play football. I mean, give him some rushes and one-on-one pass rush.
Now, offensive line might be a little different.
I'd play those guys the way they're playing. I'd play them four quarters.
But even
I would, seriously. I mean, I can remember times. Listen, I played in offensive lines that didn't always play very well. And I remember Tom making us stay out there. Mark would be sitting down.
John, you had a thought before Tony rudely interrupted you.
No, that's the same thing. I mean,
I apologize.
It's such a, you know.
I'll go to the corner.
And Tony obviously knows this better than anybody. But it's such a group based on cohesion that I think you have to play those guys as much as you can before the season. But a back, I mean, if you're a good back, you know how to run without the preseason.
I get enough in practice.
I agree.
Well, then why are they talking about playing him?
I don't know. Maybe they want to see it just, you know, to feel confident.
Make them feel better. But maybe they want to do it at home.
That's what he said, 10 days from the start. I'm just wondering about the
running
back.
I wouldn't even bring him on the trip.
They are. They're coming on the trip. And they're going to suit up and go through warm-ups.
Why risk like the chance of maybe even falling into going into the game? I mean, what's the point?
They're coming on the trip.
And that's fine. I mean, I'm being a little bit.
Get some wings.
Yeah, that's a good thing. But back to the offensive line, I agree, John. I'd make those guys play. I mean, I can remember literally everyone starting player.
Now, wait a minute. You wouldn't have Brad Meester out there playing in the fourth quarter now. Come on.
I'm not saying the fourth quarter, but deep into the third, maybe the fourth. I'm just saying this, Jeff. There were years, if we were struggling and not playing well, the entire starting offense, except for the five fat guys, would be sitting on the bench.
I remember that.
And we would be out there and getting, you know, and just until we did something that made whoever, Tom, obviously, happy, we were playing. And we had some pretty good players.
Well, yeah, but you got to evaluate some of these other guys. I mean, you know,
listen, you got to evaluate. You got to get the five guys at front.
You do
playing well.
You do, but
this team's not going to go very far if they don't play well.
Well, just a note here, since we're talking offensive line here, John Estes, I thought, played very well. You'll see it when you get a chance to watch the second half. This guy can play. No offense to anybody else, but he looks like that guy on King of Queens. I mean, he doesn't look like – I mean, when you watch him walking down the hall, you go, what's he doing in the stadium?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean
– Right.
He doesn't
– What did Vic once write about Tom Myslinski that angered Mark so greatly that he walked away from Ketchman in the locker room? Body of a beer truck. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
In Jaguars Inside Report?
Well, I mean, did anyone ever remember Yurko's body?
Oh, it's terrible.
A beer truck would be like a compliment.
No, but Estes, I thought, played real well. And when you look at him, you'd say, boy, he doesn't look like a football player. But then you turn on the film and watch him in the game, you go, he's a football player. You know, so he did pretty
center
well.
Center of the future around here, isn't he?
Yeah, Tony Maul in the second half. Struggled a little bit. Spitz played pretty good. Baldridge played okay. You know who I liked in the second half, Brian? Tony, I think that Cameron Bradfield took some steps.
79.
Yep.
Yeah, so some good things to see in the second
That's
half,
That's the kid
too.
From Grand Valley State.
Yeah, Grand Valley State, yep.
355-NFL-1-800-355-6351. Talking about the Jaguars roster, there's a little game planning. We won't spend too much time on it, but, you know, the Buffalo Bills last year were dead last in the NFL in rushing yards allowed per game at just a smidge under 170 per game.
Yeah, and I watched the tape of their game against Denver, and I don't know if you've had a chance, Brian, to read some of the clippings coming out of Buffalo. Boy, they were kind of hammering the Bills on that performance, and they did not play very well. They still got two really good players up front. Their high draft pick, Marcelo Darius, he is a man. He is clearly their best player on defense right now.
And he's playing the left end, right?
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of weird. You know, they actually list the Buffalo Bills as a 3-4 defense on their depth chart, but they were playing a lot of four-man fronts.
A lot of 4-3.
Against Denver. Kyle Williams, still a good football player, but once you get beyond those two guys, and
wait a second.
Not so good.
Sean Merriman did not play last week, but week one, when they played the Bears, he had three sacks in a less than a quarter. I mean, he was dominating, which.
Against the Bears.
Oh, I agree. And Webb,
that poorly coached Mike Tyson. I'm just giving a hard time to Mike.
but I watched Webb last week, the left tackle for the Bears, and he played against why can't I think it was on TV? Whoever they played against,
the Giants.
Thank you. And he played decent against Pierre Paul, a good pass rush, much better. My point is, I think this is good. I don't know if Merriman is playing this week. He was out last week. I hope he is, because you talk about a good test for our left tackle, Eugene Monroe, against a guy who, you know, Sean Merriman is on a mission to get back. I mean, he kind of been cast off from San Diego, a guy with the knee injuries and surgery, and I think he wants to get back to that top-end player, whether he can or not. I just know he had three sacks in less than a quarter.
There's two things, John, that you've written about all week long about what they want to see. You know, one is scoring a touchdown with that first-team offense. The other one is getting a sack on defense.
Right.
This is what the doctor ordered.
Yeah.
You're saying they don't have Bocelli at left tackle.
Man, that poor guy for Buffalo at left tackle. It's not good when the head coach of the football team wants to move the starting left guard, who is really a guard.
Levitre.
Oh, and Levitre wants to move him to left tackle.
He's only 6'2". I mean, he's a guard.
Against the Jaguars at left tackle because of an injury of some sort, whenever it was, last year. And
October 10th, 2010.
Demetrius Bell is may end up playing second team this week because Levitre is going to end up playing left tackle. And the right tackle, Eric Pierce, is not a whole lot better. So talk about a totally what the doctor ordered written prescription that this week is it.
Let me ask you a quick question, Jeff, as a defensive lineman, because I know when you played offensive line, and if you turned on the tape, and we would call him a fish, and you'd see defensive lineman, you're like, oh, this is going to be fun this week. There's not even – you don't have to worry much.
Demetrius Bell is a fish.
Were the same conversations being had on the defensive line, like begging – I mean, it's almost like, can I get over there? Can I line up on that guy?
Shoot, when I used to watch you on tape, I said, that's a fish.
And on that note, we'll take our final break of the evening. 355-NFL-1. We'll go to the phones when we return to Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. We got 9 minutes left in the program. Let's grab Armand out at the beach with a thought. Hello, Armand. How are you?
Great. Yourself?
Good, thank you.
Okay, I got a question. You guys are head coach. Which offensive lineman would you keep and why? And I'll take it off the air.
What offensive lineman? Is that the question?
Yeah.
What offensive lineman would you keep?
Keep?
Well, for the whole group.
Monroe, Rackley, Meester, Nawari, Britton.
Wanary. Make sure you pronounce that right.
Sorry.
Saturday night.
Sorry. I always pronounce it right. I have it spelled out correctly, unlike your board. Guy Wimper, Jason Spitz, that's 7. Probably going to keep 8 or 9. It depends what you do on practice squad.
Well, you may keep an extra early.
John Estes, that's 8. Those 8 for sure. Probably.
You're going to keep another tackle with Evans back.
Yeah, probably.
Guy Whimper.
I got Guy Whimper. Okay. I already got Guy Whimper as the third tackle. You might keep Tony Moll because he can play both. Tony Moll can play both.
He better play better this week and next.
Well, I understand that, but he's the one. He can play guard and tackle.
Yeah.
So those would be nine, but I mean, probably.
You know, just because you can put him there doesn't mean he can play well. I mean, he's got to play well.
I'd put Daniel Baldridge on practice squad, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's practice squad eligible.
Cameron
Bradfield.
I mean, Cameron Bradfield on practice squad.
I mean, you're going to keep nine guys, and you're going to keep at least two on the practice squad.
You might keep only eight and two on the practice squad. Yeah. You're only going to keep seven active on game day.
Well, when you get Eben back, I mean, it makes it a lot easier to feel good about maybe, you know, keeping a lower number, because then guys, Whimper's your swing guy.
Right.
You know, and then you're going to probably keep two guys inside, Jason Spitz and John Estes. And Spitz would probably be the once you get Eben back, then you'd have Guy Whimper and then
Spitz is
Jason
be your
Spitz
guy.
As
Spitz
your sixth and seventh guys on game day.
Yep.
But now if you had an injury to a Brad Meester,
Estes.
John Estes would probably be inserted in the lineup.
I agree. I don't think Estes is your seventh guy, though, just because of the lack of experience at
He's been at center, and that's it.
Yep.
You know, he hasn't cross-trained at guard.
I agree.
So on game day, I mean, that's your seven.
Armand also wanted an evaluation of Gabbert.
I think Blaine, he's inexperienced, has a bunch of upside, huge arm, love how he looks. He makes throws that not a lot of guys will make. I mean, he throws in tight windows, very accurate. The one thing that I think – I don't want to say he took a step back. I don't think that's fair. I mean, this is his second preseason game, and the guy is learning. I still think he has to get more comfortable in the pocket. He has a tendency, if he feels a rush from anywhere, to back up. The good quarterbacks step up into the pocket. Now, in fairness to him, he just watched David get hit every play, so maybe he's a little gun-shy going out there. But he's got to learn to step up, and he gets a little gun-shy. And I'm not saying he's afraid. If he sees blitz, he automatically thinks he's got to get rid of the ball right away or run. The blitz can be picked up sometimes, and you can hang in there. So I think just his
That's
presence
experience.
In the pocket is experience. But yeah. I love the pick. I think he's a franchise quarterback.
It's going to take time. I mean, much like Will Rackley playing kind of high now, a lot of that has to do with he's not quite sure yet. You know, and once he gets sure from watching him in college, man, the guy is a mauler. He can pound people. And so that pad level will drop for him once he gets confident in what he's supposed to do and who he's working with and the schemes of the defense, et cetera. And I think the same thing can be said for Gabbert. First and foremost, the guy can do things physically with his arm that we have not seen in Jacksonville.
He's impressive.
You know, so that's the important thing. And then with time, the comfort in the pocket will come because the ball is going to come out and he's going to know where to go with his eyes on that second, third read or whatever. And it's going to be fun to watch his progression. But he's raw.
They also through two games, Blaine has not made very many bad decisions in the sense of when he's taken sacks, you have not been able to look at the film and say, oh, boy, he should have thrown it here. He should have thrown it here. He's usually made the right decision and hasn't made the dumb throws.
No, he's been good.
The only thing I see that is a negative of Blaine Gabbert right now is his pocket presence. You just can't back up when the rush comes. Now, obviously, if it's coming right down the pipe, even if it's coming right at you, if you watch the good ones, they'll shuffle, step up. It's safer in the sense of stepping up. As you back up, you are now bringing in the defensive ends into play, and you might lose your head.
Is that a function of playing in a spread offense where he was in the shotgun his entire career at Missouri?
Well, I mean, it could be, but I think it's just a function of he's just young. I mean, no matter what kind of offense any college quarterback comes from, to come to the National Football League and see a playbook that you look like it's, advanced physics, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's a totally different world. So, I mean, he's in a short period of time, he's had to learn an entire playbook, the terminology, learn the receivers, learn the routes. I mean, that's a lot to digest in a short amount of time.
Right? Less than a month. I mean, when you're as close to it as we are and the fans are, you forget that the guy has not been here a month yet.
4 minutes left in the show. Who are you looking at on Saturday night? Jaguars, obviously.
I'm
where he's going.
I'm watching Eugene Monroe. I will be calling the game. And I will have to look at the replay quite a bit when the Jaguars have the ball.
Will you have an ISO camera on him?
I will ask for an ISO camera, and I will watch Eugene Monroe. I want to make sure everyone understands, my criticism of Eugene is not because I dislike him or don't think he can do it. It's actually just the opposite. I think he is a very talented, very high potential, a guy that should be a leader and can be an upper echelon tackle in this game. My disappointment is we haven't seen that this year.
Rashad Jennings, I haven't seen much of him yet, and I've heard a lot of good things, and I have a feeling he's going to play a key role this year, so I'd like to see him play.
All right, since you guys are offensive jock sniffers.
I was going defense, too.
I'll go defense. I want to watch Chris Pruszynski.
You took my guy.
You know, I mean, to me, I mean, this is a guy that you know, hopefully in the future can compete at free safety with Courtney Green. To me, he's got all my eyes, you know, and if I had to throw out one other one and steal another one of Brian's potentials, is Matt Roth.
Yes. Where else am I going to go now? William Middleton. But you said he wasn't going to play. So I'm not quite sure where to go, so let's
eat some wings.
And the last one, to be equal opportunity on the defense side of the ball, I want to see Terrence Knighton, not what he can do. I want to see him play longer and more reps and to see if he continues to take the next step as far as getting in shape.
I have nowhere I can go.
How about D'Anthony Smith, Brian?
Well, I'd like to see D'Anthony Smith. How about Scotty McGee? Just to see if he can make a play, because the coach talked about him in a story this week, how much he admires him. I mean, I know that he's a huge long shot, but come on. But let's.
How about Cecil Shorts?
Well, yeah, but at 5 for 52, and we all talked about how good he was. I mean, I was looking for that long shot kind of guy, you know, that guy that you just really need to see more of. Yeah, like Eugene Monroe.
How about watching?
I'm not sure he's a long
no,
shot.
No,
here's one to watch this week.
Okay.
Okay? Rod Isaac.
Yes. He's going to play safety, isn't he?
I'm told he's played much better in the last week or so.
Watch him.
How do you think he'll fare at safety? He's a hitter.
I don't know.
He's a hitter.
We're going to find out.
All right.
You know, it's going to be fun to watch him.
And if we're talking about guys that are on the cusp.
Guys who are still really competing.
Well, here the backup linebacker is very competitive, so whether it's Kyle Bosworth, the Russell Allen, I mean, that group, Jacob Cutrera, to see who separates themselves, not only at the linebacker position, and to see how they play on special teams.
All right. Now, can you just say definitively so that the tweets stop, you will be back here next week?
Well, actually, next week, I'll probably only be here for part of it because we got the big team. We're going to do a team teal at Jacksonville Golf.
But you're regular.
This is a regular. Yeah, this is all year long.
There you go.
We'll be here hanging out.
Fun show.
Fighting logs.
Bring food.
You're here early. He's going to want a different seat when those TVs arrive.
You call me fat. I mean, honestly, that's all you talk about is food.
228, baby.
Yeah.
What do you weigh?
More than that.
100 pounds more than that?
No.
All right. That'll do
about 80.